Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Siemens Gamesa's conference. I would like now to turn the call over to Ms. Christina Perrea. Please, madam, go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us at such short notice. Just a housekeeping comment. The call will last 50 minutes, so please keep questions to one so that everybody has the chance to ask. With this, I would like to hand the call over to our CEO, Andreas Nauen. Thank you.
Yeah, good morning to everyone. Andreas Nauen speaking, and also thanks from my side that you could find time at such a short notice. I would make some introductory remarks, which are mostly based on the message that we sent out, the ad hoc that we sent out yesterday, but I will also address a few questions that you surely have in addition to that, and then we are, of course, answering all your questions. We, as you know, we are finishing now the closing for the third quarter in 2021, and during that, we clearly saw that we need to adjust our guidance. This revision is needed to basically due to three reasons that all lead to effects via onerous loss projects. The three reasons are raw material price increases that are ramp-up cost, additional ramp-up cost, the difficulties with the 5.X platform, our new onshore turbine, and then effects that we see in our Brazilian project pipeline. All of that leads to these onerous loss contracts, where you see the biggest effect. This impact is, of course, even exacerbated by the pandemic in a few countries. We see that again, unfortunately, in Brazil, but also in other countries. In Brazil, we see, for example, supply chain shortfalls. We see project execution-related bottlenecks in logistics and cranes, and all of that we had to take into consideration when finishing this quarter. Based on the above, we needed to adjust our guidance for the financial year 2021. First, let's have a word about the revenue guidance. We will end up at the lower end of the range that we communicated to you at the end of the second quarter. The range is 10.2 billion-10.5 billion, and we confirm that. The main effect we have on the group profitability, where we have to adjust to a range between -1% and 0%, so close to break even. The aforementioned factors, which are again, raw materials, 5.X ramp up and effects on our Brazilian project pipeline, mostly for projects that get executed in 2022 and 2023, leads to third quarter results that we've listed in the press release, a revenue of around 2.7 billion, an EBIT pre-PPA and RR of approximately -150 million. That is influenced in the third quarter by the reassessment of the profitability of our order backlog, which resulted in provisions of around 230 million in that quarter. Again, as I mentioned already, the impact is mostly concentrated on the early 5.X projects and for deliveries for projects in 2022 and 2023. We have a net debt of -800 million, and the order intake amounted to around 1.5 billion, but this has the usual standard volatility effect of the offshore market and where we didn't sign large orders in the last quarter. The total backlog now is around 32.5 billion. Of course, our ambition remains that we make our onshore business profitable, especially around the 5.X platform. I will address the 5.X in a minute. Also we can confirm that the LEAP program, which is mostly to support the onshore turnaround, delivers effects. Of course, we have negative effects that compensate for that. That is what you see today. We could continue to execute the program, which has a lot of momentum. I also would like to stress that the performance of offshore and the service unit remains strong as we expected. If I then address a few of the questions that you surely have. First, let's come to the onerous contracts. The total impact of that will be even higher than what you see here in the third quarter, and it's for projects in Brazil, which we signed in 2020. These are all projects with a 5X turbine, altogether around 180 units. There's also a small effect on one project in Europe. But if you take that effect from the owner's loss contracts out of the consideration, we would have been at the lower end of our guidance for this year. So the operational performance in 21 would have been way better. I also understand that this effect of the owner's loss contract does not fully explain the drop between the consensus and what you expected. But we, of course, also continue to see other effects from factors that we already indicated during the Q2 calls that we had with you. We had higher volume plans that we still have to adjust for. Also, the India turnaround has still challenges. Then we have also raw material effects in 21 of relatively low nature. But on the other hand, we see the logistics effect for 21. And that, of course, is for Q3 and Q4. One question that we already addressed quite extensively also during the call of the last quarter results, and that remain, of course, very important, is on raw material hit that we have, and we quite often get asked versus competition. First, I would like to stress that the hit for 21 is limited, and it's also limited to a few effects, especially on resin that we need for the production of blades and on copper. It is less so on steel for 21. This changes if you look at the future contracts, where it's mostly about steel. And I would not comment, of course, what competition does, but since February and March, and we explained that to you already in the earlier calls, we have drastically changed our approach also in our sales contracts, and where we pass through to our customers, especially steel, tower steel, but also other fluctuations that might arise from raw materials or logistics. We push that much stronger than we did that in the past, and we have that now included in all new proposals that we make. There's still, of course, some work to be done on the orders that we have on hand where these contract clauses have not been included from the past. Then one topic that I would like to address is the question about the 5X. Is that a one-time effect? Is that just a ramp-up question, or is it a fundamental question for the product? We analyze that in light of the experience that we currently make. We analyze that again, and we firmly believe that the 5X is the right product. It's competitive. We can see that we can sell it. We can see that it can win against our competition. We have the right features. We still have to develop further features so that we can make it applicable in even more markets. And the current challenges or the why we are in trouble with it is clearly a ramp-up issue. In order to catch up with our competitors, we decided for an extremely ambitious ramp-up schedule where we did a lot of activities in parallel from R&D. We started sales, the prototype installation, and also now starting serial production already. And under normal circumstances, that would have been already not easy. But due to the raw material effect that hits us, the Brazilian specials with the localization, with COVID effect, and with the high number of contracts that we have for the 5X in Brazil, this now clearly shows the difficulties that we have. But this does not mean that the 5X as such is the wrong product. It's clearly the right product. And what we do at the moment now is, of course, work through these ramp-up issues, that we get the machine in full-blown serial production later in the second half of this year. And how do we do that? We strengthened, again, the engineering team that is on the 5X. We hired an additional 30 to 40 people in Brazil to manage the project, so we clearly address the issues that we currently have. Maybe then another point that is clearly on everyone's mind, what does that mean for the turnaround and the break-even for onshore? We had, of course, the target to turn around onshore and make some profit in onshore in 22. We already knew at that time that would be tight, and we had all the plans in place for that, but with the effects that we now see, this is clearly delayed. Nevertheless, we continue to see a profitable onshore business. It is possible, but with the severe impacts from a number of these, also in many cases, external factors on top of the internal challenges that we have, it is delayed. With regards to our long-term plans, we remain committed to our long-term vision, and you surely know that we target for a profitability in the long run for 8% and more. And we believe that is possible. We have, of course, quite a volatility at the moment in the market due to the effects that are described now in length. And we are currently preparing our business plan for the coming years, and we will then share with you further details during the coming calls. But the fundamentals for our business remain completely unchanged. We see growth, especially we continue to see growth in offshore. Offshore continues to perform and deliver as planned. Our service business continues to deliver the expected growth and the expected results. And our main focus continues and remains that we turn around onshore. I think with that, these introductory remarks, I would like to hand over for a minute to Beatrice and then to your questions.
So thank you very much for joining us today. Andrea has highlighted the key topics that we want to share with you. And now, of course, we'll give you the floor to ask any questions that you might have. We'll have before 10 minutes before 9 a.m. to make sure that we close the conference call before the market opens. But, of course, happy to follow up later on with specific questions or just through IR and during these days. And, of course, we'll have a full, again, conference call for the full results on Q3 by the end of this month. So now, please, if you have any questions, go ahead. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. To cancel your question, please press 02. We will kindly ask you to make a maximum of one question per participant. Thank you. The first question comes from Supriya Subramanian from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Just wanted to clarify on the 229 million charges. Is there any sort of rough estimate on what is the split between, the ramp-up costs related to the 5.X platform versus the owner's project or the raw material price increases that you've seen? And I think you addressed this partially as well, but in incremental order wins, are you all able to pass on the inflationary trends on to customers? So would you say that incremental order wins should be at benchmark margins based on, whatever is the current prices? Thank you.
Thank you for your question regarding the first one. If we could provide, the split between the owner's provision has been calculated based on our best estimate for, the raw materials prices. But of course, this take into account those are projects to be installed during 22 and 23. So the amount already includes, as you said, so the raw material increases and the ramp up cost because 5X. We are working on the prototype. The good news for us after this reassessment is the platform remains very competitive, as Andrea has said. So the reflection on the onerous follows ES 37 accounting, and therefore we have included both. It's a blended, because of course the delays on the prototype has caused us, higher, cost. And within those higher costs is also, the implied raw material, impact that we foresee for those projects. We are working hard, and that's very important for us to mitigate that impact because, of course, we have in one of the projects already locked capacity to make sure that we mitigate that. And in the coming, months, working with the procurement team to do so for the rest of the risks that we might have, as a standard. So we will prefer not to provide the split, and that's the reason we have updated on the numbers.
Sure. Good. Understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Akash Gupta from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning, and thank you for your time. My question is on indirect impact from onshore problems to your offshore business. So onshore mm-hmm. business continue to be loss-making and burning cash, and it looks like it will be burning cash next year as well, given you are delaying your onshore break-even target. How does this impact availability of resources for offshore business to fund new technology development and CapEx plan? And do you need to cut corners to preserve cash to make rating agencies satisfied to have solid investment grade rating? Or can you continue with the investments that needed in offshore to maintain your market leadership there? Thank you.
Yeah, good morning, Akash. Thanks for the question. I answer the first part, which is more our commitment and what do we do in offshore, and then Beatrice will address the financial side of it. We do not cut corners to rescue onshore on behalf of with the risk of damaging the offshore business, clearly not. As I stressed numerous times, the key for our success in offshore is a competitive product. And one of the key elements there is that we'll continue to invest into offshore and invest into the product pipeline that we have. And that commitment and that investment is clearly there. We continue to do that. We also see that offshore is a very competitive market, and without that investment, we would not be able to fulfill our target of 50%. So clearly, we do not compromise offshore investments due to the challenges that we have in onshore. And Beatrice, if you want to say...
Thank you, Akash. Yes, for us, let's name it, you know, financial discipline is key. It's within our DNA. And of course, maintaining a very strong and solid investment grade is also a priority for this company. How we are going to do so, as Andreas said, of course, the future of offshore remains bright, even brighter than before. And to remain competitive and maintaining our market share leadership, of course, we will continue investing in new features of the current platform and a new platform in the coming years. How we are going to do so and make it comparable at the same time, you know, to offset or mitigate any downside on the cash, you know, or potential, you know, downside on ratings. We are working with the offshore team on self-finance opportunities that we have within the business, because of course we can work with our clients to enhance the cash in on some of the projects to make it work. Also different alternatives for CapEx financing to make sure that also it will not impact our gross debt. And then therefore, you know, we are working on that plan to mitigate a portion of that cash flow needs. And then also additional asset management initiatives are also in place. And with working our now budget process, we are taking into account all that to remain, you know, within a positive free cash flow in the coming years.
Thank you. The next question comes from Deepak Mehta from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much for hosting the call and for taking my questions. I just wanted to clarify on the wording around your long-term ambitions. So you said the long-term plan still stands, particularly around the 8 to 10% margin guidance. So at the Capital Markets Day last year, you sort of highlighted 2023 and onwards as being relevant for that. So just to be clear, when you say long-term, does that mean 2023, or is the date indefinite now? Thank you.
Yeah, when we did the Capital Market Day last year, we did not foresee, I think hardly anyone did foresee, that we would have effects like the raw material price and logistics increases that we've seen in an unprecedented way. That is also why we currently review our business plan for the coming years. We will have the annual budget that we complete before the end of the year, and that is why, as far as we can see now, with the external effects that we see, that we can remain optimistic to reach the 8 to 10%, or that we can get above the 8%. Whether that is now in 23 or in 24, there we would like to come back to you once we're a little further with our homework.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Deepa Venkateshmand from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My question is on the commodity prices. You mentioned that this year most of the impact was the 5X.
We can unfortunately not understand you.
Is this better?
Yeah. This is much better. Thank you.
Hi, is this better?
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, sorry for that. I just wanted to, so my question is really on the commodity price effect. You said that this year it was less about commodities and we're going to see obviously most of that impact coming through next year. So could you basically talk about how you're hedging for the commodity exposure on all your firm orders, and is there any impact on the offshore side on the commodity escalation that we need to pencil in for next year?
Thank you very much. Yes, when we refer, when we close Q2, the situation on the raw materials, mainly steel and copper, are the ones, that are impacting us. But remember, when we said on 21, the main impacts that we foresee and we are seeing in our numbers are related to three things. One is the resin shortage supply that has hit us on 21. Some copper impact that also hit us on 21, and last but not least, logistics. But we didn't have any significant increase versus our expectations on steel. Roughly, the impact for this year, we foresee with these three things, roughly in the range of 50-60 million euros, related always to the volume of 21. What we have reflected on the onerous contract, as per the previous question, is mainly the impact that we have for the specific Brazilian projects that were signed on 19 and 20 with thin margins, and that the expectations on the raw materials prices for 2022 has caused us that impact. Coming back to your question, is that what is the strategy of the company going forward and the potential impact on the offshore contracts? What we have put in place is a combination of different measures to make sure that if, again, we see situations as we are seeing now on the raw materials and logistics, it will not hit us again. How this is going to be and what are the measures that we have taken are as follows. Of course, continue monitoring, the raw material and market developments. We have accelerated, all the hedge, strategy. Hedge, you can only do it, for copper. Actually, as of today, our numbers, keep air dynamics because we do that on a daily basis. But roughly, we have already covered 75% of the volume, 75-80% of the volume of copper. We did so taking advantage of some of the volatility that we have seen from Q2 to Q3 on the prices. So the exposure for copper has been mitigated for 22. And now we come to the steel exposure for 22 contracts. For the contracts that has already been signed on the backlog are mainly related to onshore. Those projects in the past, they didn't have strong indexation clauses in place for steel. That has changed because we have put in place a very strong policy and procedures that will guarantee, and we are doing that for all the new projects to be signed, next year, to have either a strong integration clause in place for steel, or of course, we have add a strong, kind of risk alert based on our calculations of steel prices for the coming years. So we have embedded on the profitability of those projects that potential, price increase. Also, we have worked on a new indexation clause for copper if needed, because we don't want to have double coverage, and then other non-steel, indexes that to guarantee that also those SBAs or new projects are already calculated with a higher, you know, cost in place. For the project that has already been signed, we have gone project by project, analyzing the clauses that we have in place. Conversations with the client has already started taking place. We have a strong target, you know, for the onshore business to mitigate a portion of that potential increase. And last but not least, the procurement team is also working on initiatives to provide, you know, further savings on other, you know, costs to mitigate that, you know, exposure that is open on a steel for the volume of 22, roughly 40% exposure open in terms of not yet, you know, acquired. Again, you know, with option, as you asked for, we also have reviewed all the projects that are in our backlog. I would say that also the combination of offshore initiatives and procurement initiatives to mitigate that exposure is in place. So we are, of course, in the process of the 22 to update the potential impact. And I will share that, you know, in due course. But again, you know, for the long-term, you know, view or long-term, you know, let's say P&L of offshore, we have also put in place new clauses to mitigate that. Always, of course, it's a combination of negotiation with the client. Our priority will be the back-to-back on the contract, but of course, you know, sometimes it's not that easy with some clients. And again, you know, it's a combination of price increases, other features on the contract to mitigate that. So what we can tell you is that a stronger, you know, process in place to mitigate the open exposure, to reduce as much as we can. And we have accounted on 21 all the impact on that we foresee for 22 for those projects that had thin margins, and therefore that's what reflects the onerous contract provision that we have allocated.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sean McLoughlin from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Can I dig a little bit more into this pricing? You say since February you've drastically changed your approach. You're now passing through steel costs more strongly. By how much have you raised your turbine prices? And what are customers, is there any, let's say, pushback from customers or delays on signing contracts as a result of these price increases? Thank you.
Thanks for the question. Yes, there are offer effects, and because these adjustments, especially during ongoing negotiations, then lead to normally a view of the customer business case. In some cases, there's still room and negotiations and contract signing continues as planned. In other cases, there are delays that we still have to work through. There are, of course, also other means to compensate for these effects, like AEP increases, additional features, and I think that is what normally then takes place during the negotiation. If it becomes unavoidable to deal with raw material price increases, what other means do we or does the customer have to still maintain the customer business case? That sometimes takes a little longer. But overall, I think it's a task that at the moment gets then always deeply discussed between us and the customers. Of course, they do not happily accept that. That is clear. But on the other hand, it's also clear that in light of the size of the increases, that it cannot stay with us. I think the customers understand that. On the other hand, they have also ambitious targets to be met. So that is. That is how currently the negotiations normally take place.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Gael Dupre from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much. Good morning, everybody. Can I dig a little bit further into the guidance, please? If I strip out the provisions you booked in Q3, it seems that the underlying margin was around 3% this quarter, so that still looks quite okay. But then the full-year guidance implicitly assumes a negative EBIT probably between minus 80 million and minus 180 million for fiscal Q4. So can you help me understand a little bit the bridge here and why you anticipate such a sequential deterioration between fiscal Q3 and fiscal Q4 when it comes to the underlying profit, excluding the provisions? So that's question number one. And question number two is about the sort of delays in the turnaround process in onshore that you've talked about. So clearly 2022 being at break-even looks challenging now, but can you commit or not to reaching break-even in 2023, or is it still too much of a stretch?
I think Beatrice, if you start with.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I mean, you get the numbers right. Regarding, you know, of course, why, you know, the implied margin looks, you know, so different between Q3 and Q4. If you recall, when we explained, you know, first half results, we highlighted two things that were impacting, you know, fourth quarter. Despite, of course, nothing to do with the raw material, you know, volatility that also is in on Q4. When I meant, you know, the 60 million euros full impact on the year for the 21 volume, close to half of that, you know, is coming, you know, on Q4. But the main reasons are as follows. One is offshore business has remained quite strong throughout the year, saying that, you know, the kind of weight per quarter is not the same, and the reason for having a lower profitability on the fourth quarter is related to the change of platforms that we are performing in Cuxhaven. So then we makes that the offshore, you know, kind of, we don't break down that by kind of a segment, but it's a slow performance, but for the reasons of changing to the 11 megawatt platform. And also the kind of delays on the load plan related to the raw material impact. Saying that offshore remains, you know, a very strong year, but the season, let's call it, you know, quarterly, you know, performance is as front loaded on the year for offshore. Also, the other reason related to the lower profitability implied on the fourth quarter is related to service performance. Throughout the year, also very strong performance. We have met, you know, our, you know, kind of target to maintain, you know, a 20%, you know, margin for the whole year. But again, you know, the split of that performance is not even through the course, and it's like, again, front loaded rather than back loaded. And the fourth quarter also has lower margins because of that. But again, you know, all over the year, you know, the 20% margin. And last but not least is the raw material impact that I meant, that is related to the 21 volumes based on the expectations on prices and the logistic cost also is reducing the profitability of the fourth quarter. So that's how you get to your numbers.
Okay, thank you. And what about the target to be at break-even, possibly in 2023 or not?
I think, as I explained, I think 22, in light of what we currently see, and it will be hard to impossible to reach the turnaround at the break-even in onshore in 22, and therefore, I also mentioned that we are currently preparing and going through our business plans again. Our target remains, our target is that we reach the break even a year later, that means in 23, and we are working to see whether and how we can achieve that. It's of course also highly dependent not only on the contracts and the materials, and Beatrice mentioned that we still have open exposure for raw materials, which in especially for 23 is, I believe, quite natural. You cannot buy steel already for the 23 contracts, and and we need to continue our diligent work that we currently do on the order backlog of onshore, on the ramp up of the 5X, on the cost out of the 4X, on productivity under LEAP, and then we can only say, is it can we confirm 23? It remains, of course, with 1 year delay, our target, but also that we would like to address in one of the later calls.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ben Miller from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Yeah, it's Ben from Bank of America. So I just wanted to understand, in terms of the steel, is there a way that we can size the impact of steel as you expect it over the next couple of years? Is there a way to actually size what the kind of million euro hit from that will be? And then just a clarification on the question that was just asked around Q4. So in the Q4 quarter, there are no loss-making provisions that are going to be booked in that quarter. Is that how I should interpret it? Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. I will start for the last one. If it was said no, of course, with the expectations that we have, unless, you know, again, you know, huge change on raw material prices for the years to come, expectations, because these are, of course, estimates, and that's the reason also we have the range on the guidance, okay, to cover, you know, that. But no expectations, otherwise we will be booking, you know, those now, as we did for Q3. So the numbers that we have run, you know, is based on those assumptions. If we go to the first question that you meant, regarding, you know, still if we can provide you kind of a range, the reason we don't provide a range is, of course, of the difficult to provide, you know, estimates on steel for the coming, you know, 3 years. What we can tell you, and that's what is important for us, is that as of today, we are focusing on steel for 22. That's the open exposure that we have. For the years to come, as we have highlighted, we are trying to mitigate from the business point of view, and of course, a strategy, that impact will not come again. You know, how again we are doing that? Active, of course, hedging strategy, not hedging for steel, you cannot do that, you know, but buying well in advance. There, of course, we don't buy steel on metric tons, we buy that, you know, within the components and segments, so finalizing the designs, you know, stuff, you know, to make sure that we order in time, procurement activities to mitigate that with other initiatives. Specific, you know, onshore and offshore targets for, you know, kind of mitigation activities as well, including those indexation clauses. We tell you that now we have a strong clause for steel tower indexation, both in onshore, and of course it was already done in offshore, to make sure that the future, you know, kind of orders are protected back-to-back. Okay, so of course we don't want to be commodity traders. We want to make sure that we have within the business the strong mitigation clauses in place for the years to come.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Fernando Lafuente from Alantra Equities. Please go ahead.
Two questions for me, please, two quick ones. The first one is on the ramp-up costs of the new 5X. I wanted to understand how you make this revision of the ramp-up process, and if there could be any risk of having something like this in the new platforms, in the new offshore platforms that you are working on. And the second one is on cash outflow of this provision, net debt, especially, I guess, for Beatriz. How do you see balance sheet by the end of this fiscal year, and if you think that the balance sheet will be strong enough to go ahead with all the investment expected for this year? Thank you so much.
Let me answer the ramp-up question for the 5X, and the you asked for the correlation with offshore. The 5X is clearly an especially ambitious ramp-up schedule due to the following effects. First, the development speed and the development time that we set ourselves is much shorter than we've ever done it before. So you are anyway under a lot of time pressure. On top of that, we need to ramp up that turbine in two different, basically, fundamental models. One is the model that we have for the global market that we manufacture in Spain, mostly European or Asian suppliers. That is the one ramp up. And on top of that, we have to do the Brazilian ramp up, which, as I explained, is particularly complicated due to additional supply chain issues that we have in Brazil and a different bill of material that you need to develop for Brazil. So you have these three elements coming together for the 5X, super ambitious time schedule and two parallel ramp-ups. This is clearly not the case, and that is what you ask about in any of the offshore machines. First, we have gone through a much more traditional development sequence with R&D, gate releases, prototype tests, and then only serial production. And it's in Europe, we start to manufacture the blades in the factories that we always do in Aalborg and in Hull. And then on top of that, we do all or most of the nacelles in a factory like Cuxhaven, who goes now through this ramp up for the third time. So clearly, it's a different time pressure and a different preparation, and it's less complex than it is for the 5X. And I think then, Bea, please,
yes,
there was a question.
Yes, regarding cash flow and net financial debt, how do we foresee and the strength of the balance sheet? Let me say, first, this company, we have $3 billion as of today of available liquidity, not touch. Maturities that we have on 22, if you recall, less than 350 million euros, 23, roughly 740 million euros to come. So despite, of course, we will have higher, capex because we want to remain, high end on offshore, platforms. We don't foresee cash constraints, okay? But saying that, of course, we know that the cash is important and that's not a constraint, but also the generation of a positive free cash flow before interest taxes is also our key priority. And coming back, our goal remains to be this year close to zero for the reasons that you mentioned. Despite a portion of the cash of this onerous provision is not a cash out of 21, it will be cash out of 22. So it limits our constraints this year. So again, for this year, of course, if that's the goal, the net financial debt that we foresee for year end will be much lower than the one that we have for June closing to meet that target. With the view that we have now and the cash flow forecast, we foresee that it's feasible, a combination of working with our clients on prepayments, asset management initiative should drive our target to the zero free cash flow this year, as I said before, interest and taxes. And for the years to come, as I mentioned before, one of the initiatives that we have in place is that all portion of the capex of offshore, the new platforms or new features, will be self-financed by offshore as well. And we are working on different initiatives to do so. So coming back to your question, we do think that we have a strong balance sheet to commit to afford those capex, yes, but of course it has to be aligned with no increasing of the net financial debt of this company significant to meet the investment grade criteria. So we are working with those cash, not a limitation, and to make sure that we also comply with those ratios.
Thank you. The next question comes from Virginia Sanz de Madrid from Santander. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Good morning. I wanted to check if these onerous contracts that you have seen in Brazil is really limited purely to Brazil. So have you revised other 5X contracts that you have signed in the past in other parts of the world that may be also affected, and we may be seeing provisions over the next quarters coming through? And then we have been talking quite a lot about the evolution of raw materials, but the logistics situation, is that looking better, or could that further represent problems over the next quarters as well? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Virginia. Regarding, the onerous provision, is we have reviewed the whole 5X portfolio, yes. When we have, in the preliminary closing of Q3, we have done that assessment. What we can tell you is that these 229 projects are related to 229 million euros of onerous provision is raised with four projects, out of which more than 90%, comes from the Brazilian project. So there is a small portion for one project that is not Brazil, but not significant in terms of amount. But we have to revisit the whole portfolio of the 5X. the reason of those costs of having the guidance and the range is to cover, you know, different assumptions on the onerous provision, and depending on how the assumptions and, of course, the execution of the projects will continue, that onerous provision will be subject to changes. But we have run that onerous provision with the best estimate that we have as of today, and those assumptions have been in place. And then your other question was related,
to logistics.
Logistics, yes, thank you. Regarding the logistics cost, what we can tell you, we have increased in our estimates for this year, that potential increase. What we are doing is working with different suppliers on mitigating that logistics cost. And then also within our calculations for the new project, we are trying to include within our, you know, new project an indexation clause for sea freight, you know, and also it's being worked on with the teams to cover that contingency also within the project.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And the last question comes from Akash Gupta from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my follow-up. My final question is on visibility in onshore business that you already have from your backlog for next year. So let's say if you want to do 5 billion next year, how much of that is already secured through backlog, and how much more do you need to win through new orders just to get the price mix in backlog for next year, that how much could be legacy orders and how much could be new orders with improved pricing when it comes to 2022 onshore revenues. Thank you.
Yeah, Akash, let me try to address that, and thanks for the question. As you have seen, the order entry for onshore continues to be, I would say, okay to strong. We signed the orders that we expected, and at the moment, the coverage for next year is about 2/3 or so. We are covered for next year. On the one hand, that is of course positive, because then we know what we have to work on next year. But of course, it also limits the possibility to introduce the new clauses with this effect for 22 in order to pass through. Nevertheless, we have already started with that, as I mentioned, much earlier this year. But not all of that hits already the backlog that we currently have. So somewhere around 2/3 is already in house.
Thank you very much. There are no further questions in the conference.
Yeah. If you allow, and thanks to all of you for your patience, and also all the good and fully understandable questions. We are, of course, not delighted to have that call this morning. We are in this new management of SGRE. We are working together now more or less a year in that, and that we would have to come here today with that message is clearly not something that we expected. On the other hand, I would also like to say, and as also mentioned that in my introductory goals, that the fundamentals of our business remain unchanged. That we see the growth, I think we've seen much more momentum than we've seen a year ago in terms of the long-term outlook for the wind business. So clearly, that has not changed. It has, I would say, even improved. We also continue to have a good performance in offshore and in service. And in these difficulties that we now have to share with you also overshadow that we make actually progress in onshore. Of course, hard to believe, hard to understand if we come with these messages. But on the other hand, if you look what we, for example, do in India, we introduced a new platform. It took us a while to get orders. Now we signed orders, also orders with the new turbine that we wanted to introduce, also orders with a new, completely new setup in India and so on. Of course, all of that gets now maybe overshadowed or clearly overshadowed by the news that we have to share today. But on the other hand, we remain committed to the turnaround in onshore. We see the prospect of the industry, and I think we started many things that go in the right direction, and also that we defined a turbine like the 5X. It was the right thing to do in order to bring onshore back. Now we have to work through the starting difficulties, and that is what we have to do in the next few months. So, but otherwise, many thanks for your questions, and then I'm sure we talk in a few weeks again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone, and happy to follow up with any further questions that you might have. Thank you for joining us today, and looking forward to our Q3 results by the end of the month. Thank you, everyone, for joining today.
Ladies and gentlemen, Siemens Gamesa's conference is now over. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you.